It has begun.
It has.
Yeah, sure.
Hello, so everybody. Here, should we do an introduction?
Oh.
Cool. Hi, everyone. Seriously? This is the first episode, the pilot of what we're calling Shovel VR. Dig deeper. And
than reality.
Dig deeper than reality. And we're three cognitive scientists that have been kind of focusing on virtual reality and doing research for it. And that's kind of our strong point that we want to create a show around about, and a kind of a tool for developers to learn from the actual years of virtual reality research that exists out there. So we will discuss research topics, discuss about what's happening in the latest in the industry with the latest news on hardware and software, and how people should be using the research that we do know about, and tying that into best practices and things to design around the human perceptual systems and the proprioceptive systems and things. So you don't need to have any prior research knowledge and scientific things. We kind of want to talk about these topics in a good layman format so that everyone can understand. So if we throw out big terms, we'll try to define them and talk about how it connects to other terms. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it was a pretty nice summary.
Cool.
Going to plan to do. So maybe a small disclaimer. It's a certain way of first podcast we are doing. And it's also the first episode. Don't judge us too much. We're trying to educate you and to share our knowledge with you.
Nice. Let's go around and introduce ourselves.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Peter. I think you can do it.
Oh, yeah, I'm Peter. I'm studying cognitive science. Hooray. I want to know how the mind works. And I'm super fascinated by virtual reality.
Sure.
Because in a certain way, I believe that virtual reality will change the way we interact with the world. We can research the human better and also help people with it.
Nice. Where are you from, Peter, before we go to Chris?
I'm from Russia, but I'm living in Germany. So it's kind of complicated. I'm from Europe. Let's call it Europe.
What I'm trying to get at is the university that you're from, but...
University of Osnabrück.
There we go.
Damn. Now you know it.
Hello, so, I'm Chris. I'm the citizen of virtual reality. AKA, I am coming from University of Osnabrück also. By official passport citizenship, I'm from Poland. However, I live in Germany. And I am interested in increasing the human performance just by simple behavioral tricks. Like in this particular case, use of virtual reality just to make your life simpler and better.
Nice.
High goals. Now, let's go to you, Azad.
My name is Azad Balabanian. I usually go by Oz, if that's what you guys want to call me. It doesn't matter. And I am an undergrad cognitive science major in the University of California, Santa Cruz. And I'm more of a HCI, human-computer interactions, kind of design, and UI, UX is my main focus. And what I've been kind of really interested in is the social aspect of VR and how having, you know, head tracking and hand tracking and having the presence and immersion in VR really kind of can facilitate different ways of interacting and socializing in VR versus Skype or even phone calls. So that's one big aspect that I like to delve deep into.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I think we all have our interesting, cool little take on VR, and bringing it all together is just a cool medley of brains.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, in a certain way, we see right now a huge new wave of virtual reality coming all us, thanks to Oculus and other guys there. And I guess, like, we can call ourselves VR enthusiasts. We are, like, super focused on the topic, reading up on it, stuff, trying to understand it.
At this point, if we are doing a podcast ourselves, we can also call us VR evangelists. To spread the good news.
Evangelist. Yeah, I really, that's kind of what I've been noticing about myself is ever since getting even more and more into VR, I just can't shut up about it. And it's honestly, I'm starting to annoy myself at how much, like every dinner party, every Christmas party I go to is just like, so have you heard about the new virtual reality? And it's just becoming like a Mormon going door to door and just knocking on people's doors and telling them, you know, have you heard about the good news? But it's the good news is about virtual reality.
Well,
yeah, I have also noticed the problem with myself.
Technically, our professor at university is already claiming that all we can talk about is virtual reality.
I mean, that's all we've been talking about together. I don't even know.
But how can we stop? How can we stop? It's just impossible not to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have a motto in my life. Like, you have to catch one bubble in your life, right? I was too young for the .com. I missed the Bitcoin. Now, you know, the VR bubble is still carrying me somewhere. And this bubble, it don't mean it's like necessarily negative, right? So the .NET thing still ended up with pretty successful IT industries.
Imagine if we jumped on the Bitcoin bubble a couple of years back and
I would be rich.
We would be sitting in millions right now.
We would have pounds to run a very good podcast about virtual reality.
We would have really good equipment.
We still can do a very good podcast. Yes. Yeah, if you noticed, our dear listeners, right now we are using standard equipment. This is the first alpha or beta version. We'll get better with time. We are still experimenting. We are learning. As all of you are learning about VR, we have to learn about audio.
Yes. And
so if you have any suggestions,
this is exactly. This is a proof of concept that we're want to play with. And whoever is listening, you know, one or two or maybe even three listeners, we'd love to hear your thoughts. And I mean, we'll provide a way for you to contact us either on Twitter or through email and whatnot. So
yeah, we're working on it.
So yeah, let's. Do you guys want to jump into it? Let's talk about some virtual reality.
Mac versus Windows, Oculus.
Oh right, yeah, that was
VR support.
So before we started recording, we were talking about how I was recommending for them to get a Mac. I mean, I think just using a Mac and whatnot, or going into the Apple ecosystem is very usable and friendly, and that's kind of the system that I've been tied into. You know, I am holding an iPhone, I'm talking on a MacBook, and I have an iPad in my backpack that I like to read on, and they all talk to each other really well, and it does work in a great way. You don't have to install drivers for things, you just, you know, just does things whatever it needs to. Unfortunately, Oculus dropped their support for Mac and Linux, I think, a couple months back with 0.7 SDK.
Yeah, for Linux, it's quite a long time ago they dropped it, but for Mac, it's quite recent.
And I don't think that's like an end goal that they have is to isolate those users, but they just want to concentrate on one type of operating system and also the hardware that comes with that with Windows, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that. So I have to agree with you that the Apple ecosystem is in a certain way the walled garden, right? So it's giving you a lot of interaction between the devices, and it's like super fancy. Mm-hmm. And the devices itself are great. I don't like the company per se, but I have to admit, you know, from perspective of UI and how it works together, it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But
you don't think they're revolutionary? What? You don't think the Apple Pencil is revolution? What?
look, I'm pretty sure that, I mean, I tried the iPencil when I was in the US. It's cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, the devices are great, but I mean, you know, I'm considering myself getting when I will have a work phone, an iPhone or something, because, you know, you can work nice with it. But I'm like not a big fan of any operation system per se. I'm using what has to be used for in a certain way. I'm used to Windows, but
for me, the big wall is the price. For the price of the good MacBook, I can buy a Razer laptop and have Witcher 3 running on it swimmingly.
And here is the point. There is basically no laptop from Apple that can run VR properly.
Mm.
So there are gaming laptops that can do it, there are working stations, but if you want to buy a powerful Mac that will run VR equivalent to a $1,000 PC, you will have to spend $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. And I'm pretty sure that there won't be a huge amount of people when the Oculus is released running immediately, spending a shitload of money.
How much did you just say that you need for
VR?
They
recommend $1,000.
Yeah.
So it's the minimum of a PC that will basically run the Oculus proper. But I think like if you want to have a higher, bigger SSD or whatever, you have to spend like 1.3, 1.5.
The price range for Oculus PCs is between 1,000 and 2,000.
And yeah, we are speaking without monitor and peripheral.
It's right? Just the tower.
Just a tower.
It's, I think, so in recent news, the Steam VR came out for Oculus, right, DK2. And I think that was about a week or two ago. And I tried running it on my lab computer that had, the GPU was a 970. And I know everyone has been having issues, actually, with frame rate issues. And I believe someone was saying a 980 is kind of the minimum. The 980 GTX is the minimum for even in the HTC Vive.
It's so, actually Oculus official quote.
Is it? Okay,
yes.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, what is that? $300-$400 for the GPU?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can get two of them, but like, I'm pretty sure that when you will get, you know, a powerful Mac that has the same capability, you're just spending $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, which is okay. I mean, for Apple, you pay more for whatever reasons. Like, people like it and it's happy, but the amount of people even being able to afford a powerful Mac for VR, I think it's neglected for Oculus now.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think Mac even has any kind of integrated GPU that's that powerful, even for $3,000, $4,000. Like, the most powerful thing they have is the Mac Pro, and I don't know what...
It's a laptop, yes, but you have also the Mac Mini.
No,
you have the
Mac Pro is not the laptop, you know, that cylinder-looking...
Ah, yes,
thing.
No, you can have three GPUs inside it.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Huh. So that's good, I mean, people have been using that for video and any kind of...
Yes, but if you get it like in a proper equipment, it's an amazing design. Like, I really am in love with the design of this device, but it's hilariously expensive. Like, hilariously.
I think at the time when it came out, someone did a comparison when they tried to make a Windows with the same amount of capability, and it ended up being cheaper to buy a Mac Pro, which was $3,000 or so, $3,000 or $4,000 at the time, which was about a year and a half ago. So, you know, things could have changed by now. But
and there was a difference with the pressure on certain components. So right now, if you think about the virtual reality, your main pressure is on GPU. And possibly from all the other perspectives, the Mac can be more powerful, but they don't consider GPU.
Well, I mean, if you look at the numbers of Steam players actually using Linux, Mac, or Windows, Windows is dominating it. Like, there are people using their Mac to play, like World of Warcraft runs, and there are some cool games. But as a publisher, you will, especially in such a hard VR market as it is, right? So you kind of investing in the future, you won't port it on anything in the beginning. So, I mean, why would they do it? I mean, they seem to have to have Mac support, so they will have it in the future, maybe. But, maybe so Apple will come up with something.
That's the interesting thing that we're seeing with Apple now. I mean, I've already seen some job postings for VR-related jobs in Apple, and they've VR and AR patents being filed for a couple of years now.
Yes.
So, you know, something's happening. I'm not sure what. And I'm sure it has to go. This was actually something I thought about yesterday. It kind of dawned on me. So, okay, Oculus is working with Samsung, a phone company.
Yes.
Valve is working with HTC, a phone company, both of which are making the screens for their things. Apple, again, a phone company, also a display manufacturer, I believe, even though they do work with Samsung on a couple of things, which is really funny, right?
They don't produce their own displays, they buy them.
Okay, so I'm guessing they're getting it from Samsung, but
they
do you think that's where they're coming in, was some kind of a display, or probably a whole device itself, and not just a display, but maybe mobile is their target?
Okay, so you see, I'm really sure that it's not an issue of the display. If the display is on the market, everyone can buy it and put it in their device. Like, there is no super duper screen out there that only one company has. I mean, they are compatible to each other. I think what it comes to is the ecosystem and the software. If Apple can reproduce the same amount of work that people at Oculus put it inside the whole SDK, and I mean, the people at Steam have also worked since many years on VR, right? So it's not that they just came up with that. So like Apple has something prepared and they can make it ergonomic and make people use it, it's fine. I think that at this point it's not so much about the hardware, but the cost of the hardware. Like you could put a 4K or 8K or 12K screen, like anyone that you have there is a major company, you give them a shitload of money, they will produce it for you. Maybe it's possible or something. But it's about actually, I think, more creating the ecosystem around the product.
You know, you were mentioning 4K screens. Have you seen, there's, I think, a Sony Xperia phone that just came out with a 4K screen. It's interesting because it doesn't actually run 4K all the time.
Exactly.
Yes. It's, I think, 1080p or something maybe a bit higher from that. But then if you have a picture or video, you see it actually just like snap into 4K and then suddenly more detail comes around. So the capabilities are there, but it's...
I'm pretty sure that there were rumors about Sony to Sony doing something with mobile VR with this 4K screen, but like I'm pretty sure it will end up in some of the HDMIs.
Mm.
I mean, it's amazing, but like if you look at the calculation of power needed to have proper render on 4K, like we're speaking before about 980.
Mm-hmm.
That is for the Oculus, and the Oculus has, what is it, 1.8 times more than full HD, so there's like basically, you need double amount of calculation to just have 4K, and the problem is that the Oculus internally is rendering with a higher resolution and downsampling it, so it's like a certain anti-aliasing effect that you get, because they have to anti-aliasing, because they're like rendering it with a high resolution, downsampling it, and then you have like overlay of the eyes, so in the end, to actually go to 4K, means you have to have at least two of those super expensive GPUs. And people will get a computer for $1,000 if it's worth it because you can play nice games with that. But the moment the computer starts to cost $2,000 or $2,500, I'm sure that there's already a barrier that people come considering that you have to get the Oculus and good screen, you know, and peripherals. Like, it's a lot of money.
And that's the kind of a barrier that's keeping content creators and investors a little bit hesitant, is because like how big is the market for that? Mm. And that's where I think Gear VR is a beautiful way that they
solve
that. Or Sony VR?
That's
a thing?
Sony PlayStation.
Sony PlayStation.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was thinking of the phone all of a
sudden. Yeah, no, there's a Morpheus thingy from them.
PSVR.
So I read recently an article that basically claims that Sony will, with this PlayStation VR, I mean, it's called PlayStation VR, so PlayStation VR have much higher sale numbers than Oculus, and I'm hesitant to, like, taking a side here or there, both companies are cool, but I have a feeling that because it's very cheap to get a PlayStation, people might actually get it.
I think so. What's the numbers? Is it 10 million people with a PS4 currently?
More.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
That's 10
more
million.
Computers.
That's 10 million more than what Oculus currently has in the market. Like, yes, they have a bigger brand name, but to actually be able to run it, you know, that's the issue.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen recently an estimation.
30 millions worldwide.
Nice. What were you saying, Chris?
So I've seen recently an estimation that was based on the amount of the graphic cards on the market that can handle the modern virtual reality. And in the end, it said that by the end of next year, we will have 300,000 head mounted display units sold. That includes Oculus and HTC Vive together, because that would be just few percent of all those graphic cards that can do this.
Exactly.
Yeah, and especially computer manufacturers coming out with like a made for Oculus kind of computer, like just like made for iPhone.
Okay, look, this is made for Oculus is just a sticker, so it is basically
sure.
The computer is powerful enough, but.
But I mean, it's a good certification to have. It's, you know,
I'm hesitant to those certificates. My screen, it was just a normal screen, had a Ready for Windows logo on it. what does it mean?
It's true.
No, the thing is that PlayStation has already a brand, so it's like buying head-mounted display for PlayStation is like buying DualShock for PlayStation. So the gamepad that they have that is improved compared to the other gamepads that they have for PlayStation. So buying their head mounted display for 300 euros and buying and having a console already for some time is a different story than improving your own PC that you had for 2 years to the point that it can handle head mounted display in the first place, and then also buy this head mounted display for another 400 euros that costs around the same as you had to pay for the graphic card.
Right. And then let's be honest, on consoles it's way harder to pirate content.
True.
The sales there are just more steady. So, I mean, I'm not a big fan of consoles. I'm more a fan of the PC, whether it's a Mac or a Windows, to be neutral here. It can also be a Linux. But I kind of like my tower or my laptop I can take apart so that people have different flavors.
I mean, as techie as I am, I actually am more of a, I've been more of a fan of console games because I grew up with it. I never had a powerful enough PC, and I never wanted to spend enough time researching how to do that because I have one friend, one of my really good friends is a brilliant tinkerer, and every time I go to his house to play on his ridiculous machine, something goes wrong, and I'm like, I don't want that. I don't care how much, you know, I'd have to probably pay a couple hundred more dollars for a console and have, you know, twice as the worst graphics, but I just want it to work every time I use it. So
I understand it.
Yeah.
I know your feeling because we have exactly the same discussion many times in the year with Pet. So he opts for some new solution that will be more efficient, blah, blah, blah. And I say, no, I just want a working solution, please.
Exactly.
Well, I understand that people like consoles. I just am terrible with joysticks.
That's a big issue.
Yeah, it's a game set,
There is a huge difference in functionality.
Well, I think with VR, I think we're all kind of... I mean, yes, Oculus is coming out with an Xbox One controller, but with VR, it's marrying the two input devices of consoles and PC into some kind of a hand tracking and, you know, controller tracking device. So that, I think, is a great merging of the two. And think about, like, cross-platform gaming, that if you have the input devices the same now, you can actually, you know, probably get around to doing cool cross-platform, finally, without having a big disadvantage.
I'm a little bit afraid, and I guess this podcast today will be rather about the market, but, I mean, I'm a little bit afraid about the, what do you call it, basically the titles that only come from one platform. So
exclusives.
Exclusives, yes, exactly. What was missing in my tongue. Like, I'm more worried about those because you might have really beautiful games, but they only on one platform. And then, like, what I think it's very important is that the average person is not getting disappointed with VR. Like, you can say to him, okay, this is not, no, this is a developer kit and people are believing it.
Mm-hmm.
And no one is so far disappointed with Oculus because there is no Oculus, which is a developer kit. But the moment you kind of try to sell it and people are actually buying it with the experience, you know, I can play with it. Like, okay, I'm an early adopter, but it must have some games. And, like, he sees someone else with another device getting a super game, he just gets angry. And while consoles are very established, I think that in the like for the cause of VR, it's important to stick together because right now the growth of every of those ecosystems is rather supporting each other. And if they are interconnected, it would only strengthen it.
So we're already...
Continue.
Okay, I was saying we're already seeing exclusives come. I mean, before anything's even launched, we already have exclusives.
It makes sense. I mean, I would do the same if I would be the head of Oculus or Sony or whatever. You kind of want to lock people to your devices, but I don't think that's a very sustainable business
model. And to have a sustainable business model, I'd suggest that here comes the point where you where we need to take a bigger picture. So, as we see clearly, most of the investition goes into the entertainment. That has its own rules because you have the exclusive titles and you want to sell things for a certain platform. And there is a huge amount of money that is controlling the direction of this market. And here comes the completely other approach that has, first and foremost, the function in mind, like education or... training in virtual reality of the pilots, for example, or other serious content like the medical one. You can still make a reasonable amount of money here because that's what counts for those who produce the content in the end, for companies.
And And enterprise is much more of a not a confident. It's more they would be more willing to spend money on like you know amount of systems, and they just have more money to spend. So I think enterprise already has been playing with AR, not as much as with VR. So
since long time. Look, mean, in a certain way, you kind of see those very cheap off the shelf devices as Oculus or an HTC Vive can also be very affordable, not super affordable, but okay. And you just look to science, you look to medicine, you look to industry, and you clearly see the sustainable benefit it could create there. But if you like look into entertainment, it has to happen because it creates a market and it's amazing. I'm just like I'm really afraid that like in a certain way we, because we know science, see the potential, but the guys at Oculus are forced to see the numbers, and the numbers say something else. And I'm not sure that like short-term success means long-term success. I mean, had great companies like Canon fall apart, or Kodak, it wasn't Canon, it was Kodak, sorry. Like Kodak was like having, owning the market, and now it was sold and torn apart for its patents, because it was like not having a sustainable business model, apparently, for the long future.
You know, you just, when when the digital little cameras start going away from handheld power shots to suddenly it's in the phones, they probably should have, you know, jumped on that train and started making cameras for Apple and Samsung or whatever. And you know,
exactly.
See where they would be now.
Yeah, I'll find another niche. But this is like the next 2 years, you can stand on a fair and show some kind of cool VR demos, and everyone will be thinking, "Oh, it's VR." But after a certain time, the whole wow effect will be basically gone, right? And what do you do then? You need to have something that is giving you value. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I think like science and industry are definitely benefiting.
You're completely right in the novelty kind of going away, and you kind of see that with ourselves. You know, after we've had some, you know, a couple of months, and I can't. We're a very small subset of people that actually have had experience with VR for you know for as long as we have. But when the novelty goes away, what remains is actually the real valuable applications.
Yeah.
And that's one point that I heard actually on the Voices of VR podcast, and when he was interviewing a Google Ventures partner who's been investing in VR, and in that he said one of the biggest things he sees, and he keeps telling all these people that pitch to him, is that yes, you're getting a lot of great feedback from people trying out whatever you're making, but don't mistake novelty for value. That's a huge issue. So, you know, even try to test amongst people that have really have experience with VR, and then see how that is, you know, sitting with them. So, it's interesting.
But I'd say there has to be a certain way that things happen, a certain order, because first and foremost, we need to reach the critical mass. To reach the critical mass of normal, like average users, you need to have a wow effect, and you need to make people buy this equipment.
Yeah, you're basically riding this wave right now, and it's fine to ride it, but you just have to be careful. And I mean, you don't want to see a lot of companies during the dot-com bubble burst again because they, you know, were overpriced and just didn't have sustainable stuff in their mind, and just were riding them away for whatever reason to get quick money out of it.
Can we make a comparison to the early phone market and how? So let's say the App Store first came out in 2008 and tons of apps were released. So the novelty obviously was a big thing that they were riding on, but what was the thing?
The famous fart app.
Right. Like, you know, what has remained from those early years that we still use now? Nothing, huh? I don't know. What? Nothing. Like, let's talk about
it. Okay, maybe the flashlight app or something.
Yeah, right.
Like, I mean, you know, but all the bullshit that came in the beginning, like this, what was it, like the whip app that you actually, you know, throw your phone and makes a whip noise.
Yeah.
No one uses that. You don't see people out there in the street using their phone to create fart noises and whip around. No. taking pictures and share them.
Yeah, or the lightsaber app, you know.
Exactly. So,
now it came back. For obvious reasons.
That is back.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Quick little thing, sidetrack about that.
Yeah?
Google, since they've been doing some marketing for Star Wars, you know.
The big app that they created, the Jakku Spy thing.
So that's the VR thing, which I really wasn't that impressed by, and only saw the first episode, which was half of it was just the scrolling of the Star Wars text, and then there was about five seconds of real content. Whatever. I haven't had a chance to check it out again. They created something where it was you use your phone, your iPhone, whatever, and it's the lightsaber, and then you use your computer as the actual game.
Chris tested it. Yeah.
I don't know how it works, but I was like, wow.
Yeah, it's very easy. Like you have the gyroscope of the phone and just basically sends the information to which degree you're
right.
Same rule as behind the head accelerometer.
Definitely, but I was just seeing how they're talking to each other.
Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, internet. It's a cloud. It's on the cloud, dude. It's on the cloud.
Yeah. Nobody knows how the cloud works, right?
We are beyond the point there. Where you need to know that.
Some cables.
Yeah.
But that's actually one interesting thing. So I've been recently listening to another podcast where people are very big fans of the Mac. And there's also like Apple, but the problem is obviously gaming. So he figured out a tutorial on the internet how to install an Amazon S3 instance. So basically you're getting a virtual server in the cloud on Amazon.
Okay.
In their cloud thingy, you install Fallout 4. And then you kind of, with Steam, can map the virtual graphic card of this instance to your Steam streaming ability. And then Steam has like some kind of super crazy efficient streaming, and he was able to play via internet Fallout 4 on a cloud computer.
He said that
the lag was as long as the internet was good, and in Germany sometimes the internet sucks. It's kind of fine. So I mean, especially with such a game as Fallout, where you don't really need to do very quick movements, he said that it was neglectable.
Hmm.
I mean, if you can, send fucking video signal over the internet rendered, and you still can play it, and you have a lag below 30 milliseconds, maybe we could finally at some point see proper wireless headsets.
What's the... I think you guys might know more about this, but the Windows to the Xbox streaming connection, or maybe Xbox to Windows. What's the deal on that? And is that kind of what Microsoft could be getting into with Oculus, with their whole connection?
Yes, they showed it on the Kinect. Mm-hmm. Conference. The idea, as far as I understand, is that you're putting the Oculus on and you're in a virtual theater, right? And you have like a huge wall in front of you where the game from the Xbox is streamed, still flat. Like the game itself is not augmented in 3D or anything. It's just a huge screen that is virtually in front of you so you can play it, which allows you to play all the Xbox games on it. However, I'm not sure why they did it, because the new architecture structure behind Windows 10, Windows 10 runs on the phone, on the Xbox, and on the computer equally. So technically, when you program a game for the Xbox, it should run out of the box on Windows 10. Maybe not out of the box, but
Xbox can't support VR yet. The Xbox One I don't know how the PS4 and Xbox One came out at the time that they did. I think they jumped the gun. They missed the 4K train. They have I think it's HDMI limitations and also processing rate limitation. And they also weren't thinking ahead for VR. So from what I've seen, they're actually planning on releasing a newer version of what they have, or a completely new console earlier than expected, because the Xbox 360 and the PS3 were out for almost a decade before they had a new one. So that's an issue they're going to be. They're definitely going to pay close attention for 2016, seeing how things are going to go, and then do things to it.
If you hear this crazy rumor, I'm not sure how true it is. I've seen some pictures, they might be fake, that the PlayStation VR thingy has its own GPU.
Yes. No, you're right. Yeah, I've seen that as well. It's going to come with a small little standalone box that you're going to connect to your PlayStation.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a long dream of me to being able to connect an external GPU to my laptop, and technically it's possible. Like, there are solutions. They never hit the mainstream, and they never really, kick the market. So I think in my laptop it's maybe possible. Like in Chris Ultrabook, it's not possible anymore and doesn't have any ports. But maybe that's what they are doing. I mean, I don't know. It would be very interesting, like something we've never seen before on consoles.
Maybe that's how they'll fix it, actually, is like, well, that's what PlayStation will be doing, but maybe Xbox will do something similar.
So Chris, you're a big fan of PlayStation. You want to get one?
I will tell you in 5 days. Because I will test PlayStation only as of 2 days from now. With PlayStation Move, so the whole set. Witcher 3, Diablo 3, all the nice games and Battlefront.
You're testing those with a PlayStation Move in 2 days?
No, okay. Not with PlayStation Move, with PlayStation 4 in general. There are not so much content for PlayStation Move, and I think I have like one or two games that are not sports to do that. So I will see how it's going.
Which console do you have, Azad?
I've been out of the gaming scene for a little bit. I had a 360, I played that 360 to its last second. Like I have sunk so many hours in it. I bought it mainly for Halo 3 coming out, and it was great. But I currently own a PS3 that works. The Xbox, after its second red ring, is now dead.
It's a death ring.
Oh my god, so many hardware issues for Microsoft. But the PlayStation 3 I've just been playing with, and my housemate has a PS4 and an Xbox One that I kind of have been playing around with. But that's kind of where I want to go. I'm planning on building a PC in the near future for Oculus and Vive coming out.
I would wait right now for some new generation of the GPUs. Like, if you have money, spend it. But if you can wait, just wait.
Wait for a better one coming. Yeah.
Wait for the next generation coming out. And I mean, you don't lose anything particular. Like, if you don't really need it right now, you don't have to buy it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But that means it for virtual reality to test it with the new Oculus and so on.
I do.
But the new Oculus, when does it come out? Like, honestly, I mean, one thing that I'm really, really pissed about the whole virtual reality part is all the startups promising a lot of things and just not delivering in time. It's fine, I understand it. And it's okay. I mean, it's super complex to build super complex devices and ecosystems, but we still don't know when it's going to launch. No one is going to know to move back and forth. And
I think Oculus is definitely going to stay true to the Q1, because I mean, they give themselves enough time, and HTC was really trying to undercut them and then be the first to market with launching in Q4 of this year, which they obviously didn't. But did you guys see the headline that they're supposed to announce something really big that was the reason why they
started? So strange. Like, okay, let's talk about that now, but we have something super strange for you.
It's probably cop out, and they just couldn't deliver, but that also gave them a little bit more time to do things like this. So I don't think it's completely false that that's why they did it.
I think it's fine. It's super fine for them to do it. Like, without content you can't sell devices, and before you want to produce them, just wait.
So the latest screens and the leaks that came out, which apparently they're not really that much of a leak if the URL is as simple and very simple. It was like, you go like /2016/HTC/ new controller or something. But so the latest HMD has essentially a camera on not where your eye level would be. It's kind of at the bottom of it. Yes. You haven't seen this?
I've seen only the outside.
Okay.
And what would it do?
So it is on the outside. The camera is on the outside. So there's speculations as to like what that's for. Number one could be maybe hand tracking, which I think is maybe. Number two, they've been especially talking about tracking things in the room. So they have the chaperone system. That's a great, cool thing. But that doesn't account for objects within your way, so the couches and things. So they're saying maybe since it's already pointed kind of slightly down, it's so it tracks what's in front of you, so you don't bump into things. So it's like an extension to the chaperone system.
So this would be so amazing.
Yeah. So I think it's things. I think that's more likely that they're doing that instead of hand tracking with a camera, because it just doesn't work with Lighthouse. It's just I don't know. So that's speculation.
I have a dream about VR. Like, there is this concept of simultaneous localization and mapping. So the SLAM, where you learn with algorithms the room while you walk into it. So, for example,
explain that again.
Okay, so let me just read off Wikipedia.
Sure.
And then I will explain it, because I guess Wikipedia can make it better. Just have to click away this crazy head. So simultaneous localization and mapping is a computational problem of constructing or updating a map of an unknown environment while simultaneously keeping track of an agent's location with it. So let's say you have your smartphone in your hand, you walk into a room, right? You haven't been there before, and while you walk in the room, The smartphone learns how the room looks like. So the videos Project Tango from Google is basically showing, or that you are supposed, you know, some algorithms also being like doing with the Kinect. So you kind of learn the room, and while you learn the room, you track your position in it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there is like no golden standard solution to that. As far as I understand, it is like super cheap. Like, you can obviously use laser measuring devices to learn the room very nicely. But I mean, for robots, it's super interesting how they navigate in place. But just imagine you are in a room and you have this camera that might be a desk camera. You know, it might be not an RGB camera, it might be a desk camera, like in the Project Tango. And you walk around, and while you walk around, the thing sees objects in front of you. And then it displays them as some kind of gray overlay to your VR. Mm-hmm. And then you don't bump into them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
this would be amazing.
So
if they do this would be so cool.
We actually have something that goes into that direction. Maybe not the room tracking, but your hands tracking will be highly improved by the next Leap Motion camera. That
yes.
No longer has
only
claim it,
yeah.
Gray and this red light,
infrared
camera, mm-hmm. but the RGB camera.
Mm-hmm.
So the new videos from Leap Motion suggest that you can go from complete VR dark room to mm-hmm. AR, sort of AR, where you interact with your virtual reality, but it overlays, let's say, your monitor on the desk.
Yes. So I like that pass-through video. So that was a really, really interesting video that they released through their... They had an internal hackathon at Leap Motion,
mm-hmm.
so just their developers
mm-hmm.
playing with things. And one of them made this. So they're using this new sensor called Dragonfly Leap Motion, and
mm-hmm.
they haven't released it. There's actually... There's not even any information about it at all. Maybe that means they're not releasing it as a standalone, maybe with someone else, who knows. But
yeah, it was so recent that I guess at this point it's on the concept level.
So,
it's actually
regards Leap Motion, I'm super interested in the way how they transform themselves. Like, it's super
yes.
interesting. Like, they used to come out with, you know, your hand tracking, and then the VR thing came. And simultaneously, the website had this VR idea in it. So I wonder what they are working on. There is even a laptop with integrated Leap Motion out there.
Yeah, I think there's an HP one like that.
Yes, yes.
Either
yes.
HP or Dell. I think they started as a Kickstarter and then they became a
uh-huh.
real thing. It wasn't really that widely adopted, this Leap Motion. Even
no.
the designers that I knew that kind of bought it were like, it's kind of gimmicky. And then they were so smart to jump on this VR train when they did, because it's one of the best things that you can integrate your DK2 with is this Leap Motion.
Yes.
Even though it doesn't
yes.
work that well, you know, I think it's quite terrible.
It's still fine.
It's still fine. You have to learn how to use it, but for a new user, it's so jarring whenever your fingers start, you know, like flinging around.
Mm,
and it's,
sure.
So we can talk about actually that from a research standpoint and body ownership
mm-hmm.
and how your hand
sure.
proprioceptively, if your hands and your forearms are in the same place that they would be, that really increases the sense of immersion and body ownership. And whenever they don't correspond, then that bubble is burst. That's really soft, fragile little bubble. It, you know, can get easily burst. And so I actually don't really show the Leap Motion to my friends whenever I'm giving them their first VR experience, because there's a certain bit of learning to it. But I think
yes.
once it becomes better, with this Dragonfly having much wider range of its sensors, and it's actually designed for VR, I think would be a better addition.
That's one side of looking at it. But on the other side, there is a great advantage of the gamepad. That is,
mm-hmm.
your hands are not getting tired after 15 minutes. It's a simple physics and muscles,
mm-hmm.
you know. We
mm-hmm.
are so used to the gaming with our hands put in on something, you know, laying on something,
mm-hmm.
on our laps, on our keyboard, on whatever, that right now
yeah.
playing half an hour Gear VR with the touchpad on the side is extremely demotivating. I mean,
yeah,
I'm playing Astro Wars 2, that is highly exciting, and I just want to finish those missions, so I sort of forget about it. But afterwards, my head just drops.
It's so,
yeah.
it really is tiring. And it's only, I can see why they did it, because they needed to cut down on costs and it needed to be $99 where it's cheap enough for it so people can buy it. Brilliant move from
their point. And they had the technology.
But they have a gamepad. Samsung has a gamepad for phones that costs also $90.
Oh.
I'm not sure if you can buy it anymore, because last time I asked, they were
sold out. They don't produce them anymore for whatever reasons.
So it's meant to be, like, games are meant to be played with those gamepads, even for Gear VR. I think they all knew that when they were making it.
Actually, I disagree, because the new games have a very, very limited input. So when you had the games for the developer kit of Gear VR, you had often a lot of buttons, and you couldn't even start the game unless the gamepad was connected.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I've searched through most of the content that came out like around the consumer version of Gear VR, and none of them crosses more than like four different interactions with the touchpad.
Breaking news, guys. I actually just got a notification from Twitter. I have a notification from Lucky Palmer. He says, "Thrilled to share some news. Manufacturing continues to go well, and we are still on target for an awesome Rift launch in Q1. So there we go.
Interesting.
They're not missing it. As of literally 2015, December 22nd, 11:27 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So cool. Very cool. So that's happening.
Nice.
So now, coming back to the discussion of input, the question is, how to make the very immersive input with your own body tracking and head movement, or let's start from just head movement, that you can do for a long time.
Mm.
It's a design question that really nobody thinks at this point about, because you're just thinking about the waving around, and I'm not sure if how many people did actually played any game for longer than 60 minutes in a row.
Going back to this, Lucky Palmer just tweeted at himself, "Pre-orders are coming soon after New Year. Enjoy a stress-free holiday. We won't launch pre-orders without warning." So,
nice. Cool. Oh, nice of him.
Yeah, right.
Well, let's track it.
So, yeah, I know we definitely will. We need to be so on top of that pre-order thing. Just jump in.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, our company that me and Chris are working with needs us to pre-order it as fast as possible.
Yeah. So, hand tracking and fatigue that you get. I think so. The main fatigue that you actually do get is not from your hands moving; it's from your shoulder kind of being up from the downward 90 degrees that it is. You know, so actually having here, your shoulders will get quite
tight. It's from actually holding the hands up, not from moving them.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Exactly. You're putting strain on, you know, your triceps and your deltoids and your.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just bullshitting, but. So I think having a good leap motion where you're actually just using your hands, hand tracking, to do things within the, let's say, the degree from, it's underneath your head or from your chin on downward.
Definitely.
Having that tracking with your hand is good, and it will be great for interfaces, and I can't wait to be designing
it. It will be great for interfaces, but it's, I'm there 120% with you, but it's even greater for science per se. Like in interface science, interface stuff will be definitely benefiting from it. But if we consider that one of the philosophy of mind theories is the externalism, that basically holds that mind is not only the result of what's going on inside our nervous system, but also what either occurs or exists outside the subject, and then if we want to study the human, we need to enable him to interact properly with the environment. And there are certain suggestions from scientists like Kevin O'Regan or Alvar Noé that the mind is constituted by the sensory motor contingency between the agent and the world. And a sensory motor contingency.
Explain what that means for.
I will come to that exactly. A sensory motor contingency is an occasion to act in a certain way. It results from matching between environment and bodily properties. Mm-hmm. So, to a certain extent, just the last instance, to a certain extent, the sensory motor contingencies strongly resembles Gibson's affordances. So, when we speak about how our brain and mind works, just imagine you forget everything that you have known before. Like, you are a super fresh brain, but you have an adult body. How does the brain know that the eyes see and the ears hear, right? I mean, it's just nerves giving signals to the brain.
Right.
So the brain starts to understand the patterns.
And not only that, those signals on the properties level are exactly the same. They are not even different in the value that they send. It's just action potential. So it's all or nothing signal. And even frequencies don't change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what happens if you like fixate a point in front of you, but you and you hear someone speaking and you start to rotate your head and you're still fixating that point. So if you rotate your head but fixating something, you still see the same picture, but the audio starts to change because with headphones it doesn't work. Like if I would be behind you and I would speak, you would hear the difference. Like when the sound is there and you rotate your head, you could better locate it. And through the connection between how you interact with the world and how the world changes, or your perception of it changes, you develop those sensory motor contingencies. And those, at least for people who are really into the sensory motor contingency theory, are making up the human mind. Like, you can be less strong in this externalism claim, but there is at least something about it that's definitely sounds very solid and sound logical. And if you want to examine how the human behaves, and we want the human to understand better the way how the brain is interacting with the world, how he's coupling with it, if you want to help people with mental disabilities because you understand better how they work, or like just simply do background research, we need to let people interact with the world as natural as it can be, because it's an initial part. I mean, sure, you can imagine something. But if you're like, again, speaking about the deep motion, you can, you know, have a subject and you grasp something. How amazing is that? I mean,
It all ties into your proprioceptive system. So for those of you who aren't familiar with what that means, we all kind of know what it intuitively it is. So if you close your eyes, you know actually how the positioning of your hands and your arms are. Like, you're like, all right, now I've closed my eyes. I know my right arm is floating in the air and my left one is kind of at a 90-degree angle. That's your proprioceptive system, and that's your brain having an understanding of what your body parts and where they are in positioning. That has a huge effect on VR and actually feeling that you are in VR. So if what you're seeing yourself in VR is not matching to your proprioceptive system, then you are not in that body. You aren't. Your brain sees the discrepancy between them, and you don't see them.
A small remark, just for the listeners: you can just go on in a moment, but I can give a very nice example that everyone can do themselves when they're not right now driving. Just put a hand in front of you, in front of your face, as far as you can. Then close your eyes and very slowly move with your finger towards the end of your nose. Mm-hmm. And the closer you are to the nose, the slower you should move towards it. And at some point when you reach it, you will feel that, like, you will have a sensation that the finger is not yours a certain way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you have to do it very, very slowly. Like slower, even slower, just very, very slowly.
So whenever you have the touch, whenever it touches your nose,
our system is very good at detecting,
fast motion
changes.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you're very, very slow, it sucks. Mm-hmm.
That's change blindness actually is another really big thing that can even tie into VR really well. I'm thinking change blindness in terms of like visual change blindness, where you just sometimes don't notice a lot of things change on a slow basis, on a slow enough frequency, then you don't really notice it changing.
Exactly.
That's that kind of goes into interface design actually, and the people from Oculus were talking about how they were designing the Oculus Home interface. And so they said, okay, we're going to put on the left side of the interface, we're going to have options. You know, you have home, whatever, library, all of that. Mm. And so if you look to the left, you kind of stop seeing the content. You click on what you want. And if you don't actually see anything changing to the right, then you don't really know that anything did change to the right. So the way they kind of got around to that is that they started using kind of directional cues for you to look back to the right and see that things did just change, you know, there's a lot of, that's where I think interface is really interesting, because you really need to understand how your brain works and to work around that and design things for it. So you have to show, there's a lot of cueing that happens now in VR, where you have to cue the user to look a certain way so that they can see something change and they understand what changed. And then even content makers like the 360 movies and videos, the Oculus Story Studios. So they were like, okay, when you put someone in VR for the first time, they're sitting there, they're overwhelmed by how much there's to look around them. So how do you capture their attention and so for them to look at somewhere? So if they were kind of experimenting in the beginning, they would put them in this environment, they were really overwhelmed, so they couldn't capture their gaze. The way then what they did actually is whenever the person put on the VR, they put on HMD, it started as completely black. Then you get this little firefly, you know, that little fly with a light coming out of its butt. That comes up, and there's another problem was that people didn't know that they can look around, you know, look left and right.
Yes, exactly.
Them. So they actually started making them follow that little firefly to the left, left, you know, until they start swiveling around and back to right. And then using sound and video cues, you can kind of make people look at a certain direction. So that's like one of the earlier things that they've discovered. And, you know, not everyone has to use a firefly to get people's attention.
Sure. But one question, why do people struggle so much when having a 360 degree video? It's like, isn't that what we see every day? Like,
yes, but this is exactly what is counterintuitional, because you start watching a movie, you know, when you watch a movie, it's you look at it and you don't do anything. You sit there comfy in your chair and you don't do anything. So, for example, yesterday I gave this application It Can Wait, where you are driving a car and there is a guy writing an SMS. And at the end there is an event, let's call it, no spoilers. And so my brother-in-law and my sister started to look around because it was cool. My sister even rotated all around to see the car and so on. And then my mom put it, and then she was sitting without moving her head all the time, just in front, looking in front.
You know what I have to do when people do that, when I'm showing it? I literally grab them when I move them a little bit.
Yes, or the chair. I do the same.
But on the other hand, I get it. Not all the content actually has anything worth beyond looking forward. So like in this driving app, you could look to the side to see the car around you, but the content itself was not really anywhere else than in front. And what was more, in this particular app, it didn't really make sense to look beyond forward, because then you would not notice that the guy was writing the SMS on the phone. And then you would not understand the importance of it, because so the story would not make sense if you look to the side and he's still typing an SMS.
So there's actually a lot of instances that having it 360 doesn't really help you at all.
Yes.
And I've been seeing this with videos because, like I said, it's hard to capture the attention and draw it for you to look at somewhere. One thing that I actually really liked that I noticed recently was a Jaunt VR. These, you know, they make the video, they make the hardware for 360 3D video capture. They had one on top of this mountain, and it was two climbers. And one climber, it was at the peak of a mountain, kind of like a lateral slope. And one of the climbers was to the right, and one of them was to the left. And they had a rope in the middle. And where you are, you're standing in the middle. So when you look to the right, you see the person, the climber on the right, and you see one to the left. So instead of having everything happening in one sector of this circle, you have two interesting things at 180 degrees around each other. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. I could be looking at him climbing over there, but because of the rope going in front of me from one side to the other, it drew me to look to the left and then see that there's another person over here. These things are still being developed, and we're still experimenting with it to understand how to use your 360 degrees instead of just making something and putting it into 360.
Coming back to drawing your attention, in Colossum, you know this app where you have a very comic, very simplistic graphics, and then there is like a guy from a tribe and a very huge
Golem yes, comes around.
I've seen that experience.
They,
yeah.
They had the same app either with SMI eye tracker or Fove eye tracker with one mm-hmm. of the eye trackers. And mm-hmm. what they did is they grabbed, or not even eye tracker. No, it's just with the head direction.
Just
they
with grab games,
the
yeah.
position in which you're looking in the moment when this giant golem is going to make a step. And he's going to make a step in the place where you're looking.
Oh, okay. That's cool. That is cool.
So the game actually is adjusted to your behavior.
Yes. I like that dynamic kind of design.
Exactly.
Yeah. Developers, make note of that. That's a, that's actually really, where did you see that?
Colossum.
Or that's already how it works?
Yes, is where you're looking. At this point, I don't remember because I didn't notice it myself. I've read about it somewhere else.
Right.
But next time I test it myself, I will look specifically for that feature.
Yeah.
And also next time when we speak about links, we should post on somewhere and have in the show notes. But
yes, absolutely. I think show notes were going to be really crucial for people to all of these things we're talking about should be accessible for people to use.
But we will do it like next time. Yeah.
And even studies and things that we post and or we talk about, it'll be great because a lot of people don't yes. have access to. That's the one main problem with researchers. It's just like, okay, oh, it's behind a paywall and you don't have access to it unless you're using a university computer or something and you have access to those journals. I wish they didn't do that. I wish it was actually, you can just get to it. But
open access is a topic. I mean, at some point we might actually cut it when it's VR relevant because. When it will be VR, because in a certain way, how you prevent people from getting knowledge. And I mean, you as a scientist mm-hmm. are spending 3 years government funded, you have to pay money. So your thing is published somewhere, and then you have to pay money to read it. Like you lose all your rights to the publisher.
Well, it's so the scientific publication is, I'd say, completely separate topic because it's a huge old thing with a lot of politics.
At some point, we might just, be bored and rant about it.
Yes.
Rant possibilities.
I'd say we will rant about it in around 4 months from now when we actually are at the point of publishing two papers.
Yeah.
So right now we are still oblivious to the difficulty of publishing.
What would you say is the main conference for VR scientists to be at? Is it CHI or is it SIGGRAPH? Is it the Vision Conference? Or
I'd say one has to go to SIGGRAPH mm-hmm. and IMMERSED. So
IMMERSED. Oh, I don't
yeah.
know
so
that.
There's this huge society brewing. So it's called. I think IMMERSED. I will double check it later and put it in the notes.
Actually, it was like very close by to me in the
yes,
Bay Area somewhere.
Yes, and it's worldwide. It has its conferences and sessions in Europe too. So there is an IMMERSED Europe version. And the importance of it is because Sony PlayStation also created their own VR console. And then they merged together with this new console and... Council, and together with IMMERSED, they merged, and now there is a huge, this biggest society of virtual reality specialists.
2016. I'm seeing the 2015 one, but I don't see 2016. Yeah, I don't think they've announced anything. Oh, there's the Vision VR AR Summit 2016.
Yes.
And that's in Hollywood in February. I actually might go to this, and it sounds really cool. It was obviously these conferences are expensive. Oh wait, even the educator and the student pass is $190 with a $10 fee.
Oh, that's fine.
There you go.
I guess in terms of that's the one I was looking.
It's still fine for a conference like. I mean, we have been in Italy on EuroVR. EuroVR is an association of VR guys here in Europe, like one of the many, basically research focused. And you would also pay like 200 or 300 as a student. It's pretty nice.
200 for a student.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty normal.
Something to note, someone's computer's fan is like running. I don't know if I guess I can hear it whizzing. Yeah, it's yours, Chris. Or mine? What it was. But, all right, right when you put your hand on it, it went away.
No, I think it's mine.
Oh, it's going again.
Do you hear it now?
Yes.
No, there is a laptop behind me. Wait, I'm going to put it to sleep. There's a second laptop behind me.
Oh, you need to turn it off.
That's a gaming laptop.
Dude, turn it off.
Yeah, it's an XMG super powerful VR laptop, so sorry. Yeah.
Bear with us while we figure out our technical issues.
That's normal. That's what make podcasts live.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, it's amazing. Like people having small problems, and then you have your version to it. I always hate those over exaggerated TV shows, right? You can't really feel what they do, but here sometimes things will go wrong and it's normal.
Yeah.
Is it better?
No.
Yes, no. Or no, but.
Oh, okay.
It's all right. I don't think it's that big of an issue. Don't. It was just something.
I can filter it as post processing manually, second by second. Yeah. Should have a topic.
We don't have a topic list, so let's just keep going. And I have something I want to pitch to you guys. I want to look. Two things I want to kind of talk about. One thing I've really been thinking about, again, it's these phone makers that are making the displays for HMDs. Mm-hmm. Who, if any, have they done any kind of research on the effects of these screens on our eyes? Because they were designed to be looked at from about, you know, half a meter away from you. But what's the effect of having it up on your face for?
I'm pretty sure it's way too early for those studies. They might have started, they might have been done somewhere behind the scenes, but publishing the actual study, even by a company, takes a long time and has to have its own life cycle. So,
and probably detrimental to them.
And so, I expect those studies to be published maybe a year from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but okay. I mean, when you look at the screens, I mean, physically it is extremely near your face, but then you have lenses that virtually project it like 10 meters away from you or 5 meters away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So through the lenses and through the distortion of them, like virtually the screen is quite far. I think what has been proven so far scientifically is that blue light emitted by screens is preventing you from sleeping well. So you should like have a blue light filter before you fall asleep and read on your phone. And I mean, your eyes are focusing on something not super close to them, but like far away.
No, it's 1 to 1.5 meters, actually.
Yeah. So as long as there's no crazy radiation or something.
Although they are focusing, you know, 1.5 meters away from you, and there's a problem with accommodation.
Yes.
We can talk about that. But actually, little digression, the blue light having an effect on sleep, do you think that's literally because the sky is blue and our brains are designed to think when they see blue it's light out and so they should be awake, you know? Simple. Sure, do you think it could be simple? Maybe. I mean
let's say there are certain things that evolutionary psychology is claiming that are strange, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, when you can explain things simply, Occam's razor comes in, right? You can explain it easily, and there's most likely the explanation for that.
Who knows? Or maybe it's just.
We have a super precise time dependence in our brain that is like coupled with melanin and stuff. So when you don't see light and it's dark, your body starts to produce melanin. When the light comes up, your body starts not produce melanin.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you are jet lagged, you're basically fucked up because your time system is now readjusting, so we are super sensitive to that. And in fact, I think there have been some studies showing that we can very precise track time. However, what I want to emphasize, we are super bad at placing memories in the right order and the right time. Like our perception of our past.
The order?
I think order, and especially the time frame. Like we are super bad at saying when something happened. But the time perception of the day is, I think, super accurate.
I have something to add to that, actually, and why that is so. So my favorite researchers is David Eagleman, neuroscientist, and he actually the types of research he does is super varied. Nice. That's why I like him so much. He super young guy, I think 30 something years old. He did was one kind of famous study about time perception when you're falling. So you know how we all think that when you're falling or something intense is happening, you kind of think in slow motion or you're acting in slow motion? That actually, so he was like, okay, let's test this because, you know, he wants to see how time perception works. That's what he did, he got participants to climb on top of this, let's say, I think it was like 50 meters or 100 meters tall. And they put this type of watch on them, this watch that kind of had a timer. It would just went like one, two, three. It's a counter, not a timer. And it went on a normal steady interval. The participants stood, looked at their watch right before they fell. They looked at it, they're counting it, and then they slowly went backwards, you know, back first, and they fell, you know, 50 meters onto this safety net. Crazy. I don't know how they got IRB approval for this. You know, like, that's really hard to do studies like this because obviously the risks are high. Anyway, so he did it and he wanted to see if people's perceptions of that counter actually slowed down or if they were seeing more. Turns out they actually don't. But so the reason why you think you actually are perceiving time to be slower isn't actually when you're in it. When you're actually in it, you're perceiving it to be the same. Only afterwards is whenever you actually, since that event had such an emotional impact on you, your body actually starts making more memories within that small amount of time frame.
Nice.
So the amount of memory you have for that time frame is dictates how much you think that, how long you think that was, because you're comparing usual how much memories you make on a regular day versus that little small amount of time. Isn't that interesting? It's fascinating. Yes. I love that. I was like, that makes so much sense, you know. He actually, if anyone's interested in kind of cool brain research and stuff and they don't want to read papers, he has a show on PBS now called The Brain. And they post like the latest two episodes up for free to watch, so they could definitely check it out. I've been downloading them and I'm watching them with just to my friends, to my family even. I'm like, look at this, it's really cool. And he actually, it's not elementary with what he's talking about. He covers this latest research in a really good layman way for people to understand. And he does so in just a really fascinating way. So he's really cool.
Nice.
And that's time perception. So,
oh gosh,
time perception in VR is another thing. I think I'd love to talk to you guys about. Do you know any literature?
Like,
anything
there was
about
someone on a
time perception
or university had this great speech about time perception and how strange it is, but I don't remember her name. Figure it out. Yeah,
I propose we can make it the next major topic because.
Yeah.
We need some preparation, and I'm not aware of any virtual reality game or demo or app that would actually be a good example at this point. Maybe the drift.
Well, the next topic we might actually talk about would be navigation. But I'm pretty I'm pretty sure.
Who knows?
Time,
I mean, we'll have our topics.
Perception is super fascinating. Like, if you could trick people to perceive time differently in VR.
Absolutely. Oh, there is. Okay, that just triggered me. That just primed some memories to come up in me. So you just primed a certain thought to come up. Actually, we should talk about learning and memory a lot. That's some interesting things. So VR has actually come to kind of a cool little history of research, history that they've been doing for 10, 15 years, even longer. Mm-hmm. But a lot of research that I've seen actually has come from hospitals and therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So they did research on chemotherapy patients and how they perceiving time. So they gave them HMDs and whenever they were in their chemotherapy session, and they perceived time to be a lot lower. You know, like a lot of time passed, and then they didn't think that much time passed. So that's kind of the only time perception in VR that I've seen.
Perception. Like you have people who are burnt victims, kind of need to scratch their skin, and it's super painful. And I've seen this VR game that was developed by a scientist to help them, and they shoot down snowmen with snowballs. And it's, it helps them a lot.
It comes from Netherlands.
More the pain or not perceive it.
Netherlands.
Super interesting.
Yeah. That's cool. There's a lot of, you know, these little systems of the brain you can kind of play with. And the more of the sense you hijacked with VR, with audio, with all both of those combined, I think the more malleable the brain can become.
VR developers are brain
hackers. You can do some interesting things with that. Honestly, in a very rudimentary and elementary way, yes, they really are. It's just like the simplest way. I know, brain hacking, life hacking.
And, there's your titles. It's a creepy future stuff.
It's really, that's...
No, it's a title. I mean, I'm on your side. I'm thinking also in a certain way, you're kind of hijacking the system and manipulating it like you did with books or movies, but it's just another level. So, I mean, yeah, people sometimes misuse this.
Right. Right.
Brain hack, life hack was weird things, but a certain way. When something is a life hack or a brain hack, then this is the VR stuff.
So
yeah, I'm pretty sure
we're coming up in an hour 15.
Say goodbye.
Yeah, we should cap it, around an hour and a half at most.
Yeah.
Especially for a pilot. Yeah. Before we end things, I'm sure you guys get this question or this issue a lot with people. You know, you're talking about VR to someone, you're explaining them, even if they understand it, what's the first thing they say? Well, won't people be addicted and stay at home and do this all day? What's your response to this? How do you tackle this question?
For gaming, I'd say it's tricky. I'd say that games would not really catch, for this long-term playing. However, for example, the workstation. You need to... my dream about virtual reality is to reach the point where you use virtual reality on a daily basis, not for entertainment, but for most of the things. So, you put on a head-mounted display at 9 a.m. in the morning, and you have your beautiful desk in the forest with unlimited space around you and unlimited possibilities of visualization of what you're doing and unlimited possibilities, just like Mike Algers.
Yeah.
Algers showed. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll link that video and what Mike Algers
is about. So I have this deep, dark fear that I'm running around and telling everyone how amazing VR is, and then everyone is getting to get addicted. So I'm not so often being asked that question. I rather ask it myself. And, after 10 years, everyone is sexually privated, sitting in the room, not going out, sitting in VR, watching porn and doing great things. I'm not sure. I think the human is a social being, and like you have people, there is a study, I will find also link, it claims, or I mean, it basically shows that there is a correlation between children using social media and children being socially awkward. I think they don't call it socially awkward. Yes, however, I will come to
really? Oh, interesting.
Either social media makes you socially awkward, or people who are socially awkward are using social media because, like autistic people, let's say, they can stop it at any time. It's more controllable. So in a certain way, I think some people will use VR in a bad way for them. Like people have been using drugs in a bad way. People have been, using sport in a bad way. Like you can misuse anything. But on the average, people who just live their lives, have children, hopefully be peaceful and enjoy the VR stuff.
Yeah. So I'm glad you made the point or tried to explain two possible ways of why that is so. And that is a great distinction between correlation and causation and how, those two things are correlated. Yes, they scientifically significantly say that these are correlated, but they don't have to, one doesn't have to cause the other, and the other one doesn't have to cause the first one. They could actually be factors of a third thing that is causing both of them. So that's a really good thing, and that's something.
Oh, scientists have cured cancer. Science is going to kill us all. Tomorrow the aliens will come. We have correlation for that.
Right. So the way I kind of tackled that original question with, addiction and whatnot, it's sure, I say, actually bring it back to reality here and the current tech that we have. And I say, okay, like, you know, VR, you're kind of worried about that. But how many people do you actually know that actually sit at their home and just play on their computer the entire day?
Quite rare.
Are completely addicted to their phone and that's what they do. Yes, there actually are some people that do that. And I know some people that rather just literally sit at home and socialize with their real life friends just through the facilitated computer mediated communication, because because it gives you more control, because that's why we text, that's why we use these kind of technologies, because it gives us more control of the socialness of it. So the point I'm trying to make is that yes, there will always be certain subset of users that would rather use the tech on a much more scale, you know, and not really deal with real life, because we are kind of getting to that point of technology and in society that we can kind of live individually, and you can have food and things, everything delivered to your house without you having to go to the store or you're having to go out to hunt or whatever. So, but you were right, Peter. We are social animals, and that's actually the reason that if there was no sociability in VR, then people would probably want not really use it as much. It's a very isolating technology, but when social comes into it, it can keep people very much engaged with VR, just the same way as forums have been doing that for computers, Reddit, whatever. So the social aspect is super, super addictive, and that will keep people doing it. But I don't want to advocate the addiction part. I think people are going to keep doing their real life things, and the real life experiences will not be taken away. Like, the value of it will still be very important. But VR is just another technology to enhance whatever you're doing, or AR, I think, is enhancing real life situations, and VR will create a lot of situations or experiences that you won't have in real life, but it won't replace it. So that's just my little rant I wanted to put out there, because I get asked that so many times, especially. I really do, even from people my age, you know, 21 years old.
Okay,
two people in my parents' age.
The Earth is really like curved and not flat. Okay.
Listen, these are actual scientific, you know, like rationally minded people ask this. Because, you know, it's the fear of the unknown, and it's the fear of technology that really can be immersive. It's like, that's the first thing that people obviously jump to. And I just want to give
the
tools to our listeners for them to even think about, like,
VR
addiction and that.
Someone in a mass shooting, they will blame VR, like they blame computer games, like they blame guns. And they, you can blame anything. Like, oh, the people who, you know, kill anyone in this earth in the last few years have eaten bread or something. You could make such a claim. And it will mostly be true. Like, bread is making you a psychopath. No, it's not.
I'm curious to see how the companies are already preparing for the onset.
Oh, I think they're in the dark corner.
Are your kids
scared? They are prepared. They have the pistol to give them the gold shot when it starts. They're like, oh, fuck. What?
Honestly, it probably will help serial kids, but just people. To fulfill their fantasies and fulfill whatever thing they want to do in VR.
Yeah.
I think so. Yes. Like, even releasing anger in games has always been a good thing.
Like, Call of Duty is helping soldiers
with VR. So I wouldn't...
That's
right. That is right.
It's super contradictory to say that Call of Duty is just bad.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Uncanny Valley.
Yes.
That Uncanny Valley short film that we're seeing. What do you guys think of that, actually? At first, when I was watching it, I'm like, no, I don't want people to make content like
content.
This that will
it's
scare people from VR, because it shows people
just,
as living
it's
in...
reflecting it.
The premise of it is like people that live in a crack house that are addicted to not crack but to VR, and that's all they want to do, and they're just essentially playing a game that they're killing whatever, and they're just trying to go up the
We should
board.
Not spoil
so,
it.
I don't know if you
should
spoil it.
Yeah, people should watch it, but say
probably
no spoilers.
No spoilers. Okay, so
art should do what art does want to do, you know. So
Yeah. It is art in the end. It's a narrative.
The meaning of this movie could be that, if not for the second part, the information is that with virtual reality, we have a possibility to include those people who are excluded from society back into some form of society. So they were talking to each other, you know? They had something in common, but only in this virtual reality. So they were back in the living. So,
I mean, you can interpret the movie differently, and I think what this movie aims for is not blaming VR for anything, but maybe, you know, showing something. Also, there is this amazing book called Control by Daniel Suresh that I just finished reading. He also wrote Demon in Darkness. He's like super genius guy from the US. And this book is about... I will spoil it. There is an organization. I won't spoil it. No. I won't spoil it.
No, la 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 la.
Exactly.
Okay, it's a book. So, book spoilers don't matter as much as movie spoilers.
There is a super strong organization that is like being part of the US government that since the Cold War holds back disruptive technology from the world, like fusion and what was it? Like cancer treatment and unlimited energy, and there is this guy who invents gravity, and like they in a certain way are afraid, or you know, so they are even in the end, but they are afraid, and there was the idea that some technology will disrupt us, like the internet did, or you know, in a certain way, we used to have train stations in Chicago, and then you know, people started to build cars, and everyone was driving cars, and whatever. Detroit is a car city in the US, right? So, and then it prevented the public transportation to be properly developed there. And so some technologies can change things in good or in a bad way. And I say technology per se is not bad. I mean, we need to, especially with technologies that are capable of, you know, being very dangerous, like nuclear material, be very careful. And maybe VR is, you know, say, but with the internet, like, let's be honest, how many crazy claims have been there that computers make you silly? Computers make you bad, computers make you this, internet is this bad. Like, it comes every day still in some kind of Bolivar news and blaming it. And okay, there are problems with it.
Well, absolutely.
But my stance is we need to be rational. Like, if you're speaking about, you know, internet and censorship, let's be honest about it. Let's don't use bullshit. It's usually politics use. And also with virtual reality, like, I see a huge potential there and it will happen. So there might be some bad things happening, but like, you cannot prevent it. The technology is out, so let's just, you know, do the best out of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
We just need to be ready to face those questions and with a good answer.
Yeah,
so that's why I brought up the issue. So
yeah,
I think that's
exactly.
So
it makes
that's
best,
I think, a good way for us to wrap things up. Yeah. Cool. I hope you guys enjoyed our little discussion on the current events, the current news of VR, the current state of the industry, and also the research, the current state of research for the industry, and how can you use this research in your developments, and how you design VR for a human, essentially, and how and you essentially have to learn how a human works first and then design things around it. So that's the type of discussions and links we're trying to provide for whoever is interested in this. So
goodbye.
So should we sign off, guys? Should we say goodbye?
Well, we can
any
talk
last
about
thoughts,
the green light VR next time, maybe.
Oh, next time, we can sign off by saying how they can reach us. check our website.
Yeah.
Or individually, like we're on Twitter. I am on Azad AZADUX. So AzadUX. That's my Twitter handle. Peter, you have
so
Twitter,
you can just Google
well.
Peter Lekoff. You will find me. But on Twitter, I am Raziello, R-A-Z-I-A-L-E, I think. Well, we'll put it in the show notes,
We'll put these in the show notes.
Like, if you have this podcast, you have been on our website.
All right, everyone.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Let's push the stock
button. Goodbye. All right, everybody.
Until the next time.
Bye.